Joe and our staff work very, very hard. I'm not sure Joe even sleeps at this point. And I did not mean to not recognize you, John. John Pichotta is, as Congressman Florida says, is a hero in the pro-life movement and has worked tirelessly in Waco to shut down Planned Parenthood in Waco. Now, I was trying to make this introduction very, very formal, but you know, I decided I would just get personal. We're so very honored and happy today to have with us Congressman Bill Flores. For many years, we looked for a candidate that would beat the longtime 100% pro-abortion Representative Chet Edwards. And in 2010, Bill Flores upset that incumbent, and now we have a representative that is 100% pro-life. Not a newcomer to the pro-life community, but an outspoken advocate. Bill Flores and his wife, Gina, have been longtime supporters of pro-life organizations as well as many other community organizations, and is a member of the Texas Alliance for Life Leadership Circle. Bill Flores has cultivated a lifetime of faith, family, and community service. Please help me welcome my favorite congressman. Maybe that's because he is my congressman. The congressman from Congressional District 17, Bill Flores. So.
Thank you, Jessica. Well, howdy, everybody. It's great to be here, and it's really good to be out of Washington right now. Those of you that have come up to visit me in D.C. know I refer to it as fantasy land. It's 100 square miles surrounded by reality, but totally detached from it. And one of the things that DeVita left out, which was very heartwarming to me, is that Chet Edwards spent about, well, he spent more than $4 million to make me look like the world's worst human being. And his payoff for that was he suffered the worst loss in the country of any incumbent. And it was because of people like you and the people throughout District 17. I've got a couple of my personal heroes that I get to represent in this district. We've got a great pro-life district in Texas District 17. You've got folks like Dr. John Pichottis, who's one of my heroes, who has just about, I mean, he's on the road to eliminating the taking of innocent life in Waco and in McLennan County. Abby Johnson is one of my constituents, and as you know, she's the one that went through a huge change in life and heart and went from somebody who didn't see the light to somebody who today aggressively protects life every day. I've got a couple of introductions I'd like to make before we go too much farther. Members of my team, I could not represent the people of this state well if I didn't have a great team of people in Washington and here in the district helping me out. So I'd like to start with Jeff Morehouse. If you'll stand up and just hold your applause for a minute. So, never mind. Anyway, stay up. Jeff is my chief of staff and is my right-hand person in the D.C. office. Tim Head, would you stand up? Tim is our district director and runs the operations and keeps the, he's where the rubber meets the road here in the district and works in our Waco office. Brandon Simon is standing over there in the corner. Brandon is in our is our field representative and represents us here in the Austin office. So give them a round of applause for what they do. I want to point out one other person. I haven't pointed him out in a long time, but Matt Makoviak, would you stand up? So Matt was my campaign manager and helped me win this district, and so he and I had our fair number of fist fights along the way, but it did work out well for both of us. And so, Matt, thank you for what you do. Matt and I went to different schools. I'm still working on him a little bit. But anyway, I want to, as DeVita said, both Gina and I are passionately pro-life, and we were pro-life before we decided to run for Congress. And it shows up every day. You know, there's somebody up there that measures everything that you do in Congress. I mean, you'll find somebody that gives you a vote rating on everything from, you know, how do you feel about people washing their hands three times a day to whatever. But anyway, my NARL score is zero, and it has never been higher than zero, and it will stay at zero for as long as I'm in this office. And my pro-life score, as you've heard, is 100%. My Planned Parenthood score is zero, and after the news that came out about them about 3 weeks ago, you know, I'd like to make it a negative number if I could. Anyway, we think it's the duty of everybody in all across our country to protect human life, particularly those most vulnerable, the unborn, and to protect them from the point of conception until natural death, and we hope to do it. I was asked to do a couple of things today. One is to give you a DC update, and the second thing is to leave some time for Q&A. And, of course, I'm going to talk a little bit about the things that we're passionate about, pro-life issues. If you were to run polls today, what the folks in this country would tell you, the two most important issues facing America today in most sections of the country are the lawless overreach of this administration. And the second thing is the border crisis. Now, after that, it tails off and you go a bunch of different directions depending on where you are. If you're outside of Texas, jobs and the economy is a big issue in about 34 states. If you're in Texas, that doesn't even make the radar screen because we're fortunate. We live in Texas, and we've got a great economy. But let's run through a couple of these important issues if we could. The first is the border crisis. Now, why did the border crisis come around? Well, in the summer of 2012, the president signed a deferred action memo, which basically said that to some folks that are here illegally, if you're here and you meet certain criteria, you won't be deported. That was an unlawful action. Now, what happened next, though, is that some enterprising entrepreneurs down in Central America said, hey, we can create a business out of what the president of the United States just did. And so they started these business enterprises to basically smuggle children, advertise to smuggle children from Central America to the United States, saying, if you pay us a few thousand dollars, we'll get your children to the United States, and they will be given permission or permiso to stay in the United States. Then the president didn't use the 2008 trafficking law the way it was intended to protect victims of trafficking. He used it to protect all smuggled children and to allow them to stay here. And so we've seen a ramp up to about 57,000 unaccompanied minors come across the border. Now, we're a compassionate nation. We're a compassionate people. And we believe in taking care of these children while they're here. We also believe in the rule of law. And we need to, even though there is a separate debate about immigration reform and what that looks like, we need to find a way to reunify these children with their families back at home as soon as we can, in a compassionate way. There are three different approaches to doing this. The president asked for about $4 billion to essentially just allow us to spend money to continue to house and feed and eventually educate an ever-increasing number of children. Didn't add any money for border security and didn't add any money to help find a way to judicially process these victims of smuggling, if you will, and to help reunite them with their families. The Senate looked at a smaller bill that was about $2.7 billion and when it was unable to pass it and get it across the finish line. The House, the environment in the House is more rock'em sock'em. I mean, it's a high-energy environment. You got a lot of people that are passionate about things. And we struggled over the course of a few days, and were able to put together a $650-some-odd million bill that would do a few things. One is it focuses on border security. The second thing is it puts in place the judicial resources so that we can help get these kids a speedy hearing. And then it puts in place the resources to help get them back in their countries as quickly as possible. We will give them all the other rights to which we entitle somebody that is in a situation. I mean, if they're an asylum seeker, they'll get a chance to have their asylum case heard. If they believe they've got a credible fear claim of some sort of injury or problem back home, they'll get to have that. Otherwise, we're going to do our best to reunite them with their families. And we had money in there to take care of them for the time that they're here. That passed on a bipartisan basis. We also felt like we needed to do something to turn the please come north sign off at the border. And that was to pass a bill to stop DACA, as it's called, the deferred action process memo that the president initiated, and also to amend the loopholes in the 2008 Trafficking Act so that it only applies to children that are trafficked. And it doesn't matter where you're from. Before, that act applied to everybody, unless to children outside of Mexico or Canada. Today, it applies to everybody assuming that we can get some help from the Senate and ultimately get it signed by the President. So that's what we've done to protect that, to deal with that particular issue. The next thing has to do with veterans. Let me tell you a little bit about the VA first. The VA is the nation's second largest bureaucracy. There are 330,000 people that work at the VA. Some of those people at the VA are very committed to putting veterans first. And they always remember that the veteran is at the top of the pyramid of everything they do at the VA. Unfortunately, with a lot of bureaucracies, not everybody feels the same way. And so the central office of the VA began to issue all these measures that they wanted to have the veterans' health care system measured by. And one of those had to do with waiting times, and then there are dozens of other measures that were imposed as well. What happened is that the bureaucrats at the VA that were in charge of adjudicating these things, particularly the waiting list, quickly figured out that they couldn't do it. But they did figure out that if they cooked the books, that they could get their bonuses for doing this. And so we had veterans that waited for care that they were promised and never got that care. Some actually died while they were waiting for care. And we, each of the House and the Senate, decided that was a bad thing. Let me say one thing. I'm going to go off on a tangent for a minute, and I'll come back to veterans in a second. There are about three things where you find bipartisan agreement in Congress. Not, unanimity, but large bipartisan agreement. Number one is taking care of our military. Number two is taking care of our veterans. And number three is supporting Israel. And so we found those. And so with respect to veterans, coming back to that for a minute, the Senate passed a bill to deal with the crisis at the VA. The House passed a bill to deal with the crisis at the VA. They were different. Under our form of government, you form a conference committee, you get together, and you try to find a way to thrash out the differences. The Speaker of the House of Representatives appointed me to be one of the House representatives to that joint House-Senate committee. We worked together, and we came up with a bill, and we passed it the week before last to deal with our veterans. Now, what does this bill do? It essentially says, if you're a veteran and you live over 40 miles from a VA facility, you can use your Veterans Choice card to get care from the health care provider of your choice. The second thing it says is that if you have to wait more than a certain number of days for care, you can use that same Veterans Choice card and you can go seek care from a health care facility of your choice. In other words, we give the veteran the option. Now, the mission of the VA health system is the best health care anywhere. And I truly believe in the word anywhere. And so the Veterans Choice Card allows the veteran to decide where they want that health care. The good news is the House and the Senate came together through the conference committee process. We crafted a bill, a compromise bill, that both houses agreed to and were passed. It went to the president, and the president signed it last week. So this is now law, and we're taking care of our veterans. Now, where I think this goes, this is not the end of the story with respect to the VA. I think if you look at large bureaucracies, they're just stunningly incapable of taking care of the basic functions in their mission statements. And so what happened in the VA is you've got a great cadre of folks in the VA that really put veterans first, but you also have too many non-committed bureaucrats to that mission. And those bureaucrats would take care of themselves first, or they'd take care of their union. I don't know why they have a union, but they have one. And so they would take care of those things instead of taking care of the veterans. The best solution to this is to build the VA of the 21st century. And in my view, the VA of the 21st century is a much smaller, more agile VA that allows the veteran to choose the health care they want, except for certain circumstances, and allows them in a more timely basis. I think what we'll wind up with is better health care, more timely delivered, at a better value to the taxpayer. Now, how do we get there? If you look at the VA and the DOD, the Department of Defense health care systems, there are some things they do better than anywhere else in the world. If you have post-traumatic stress syndrome, traumatic brain injury, crush injuries, burn injuries, amputations, polytrauma situations, prosthetics, you can't get any better care anywhere. And what I would envision someday down the road is these centers of excellence in the VA and the DOD. And if you're a veteran and you're afflicted by one of those issues or subject to one of those challenges, then you can go to the centers of excellence. Other than that, you can use your Veterans Choice card to go where you want to. And again, I think at the end of the day, you have a smaller, more agile, more effective VA that provides better, more timely health care at a better value to the taxpayer. So I think this bill plants a seed to start us that way, to give veterans a chance to see what it's like to move outside of the brick and mortar and the bureaucracy of the VA and to get better health care as we move forward. Another issue that is kind of below the radar screen, I think many in this room probably are following it because it's only a few notches down in importance below protecting life, and that's what happens to the lives that we have today. And that has to do with human trafficking. Human trafficking is estimated to, let me put it this way, about 20 million people around the world are subject to human trafficking today. Human trafficking is slavery. And what that means is we have more people enslaved in one form or fashion today than at any time in the history of the world. Human trafficking is a scourge on this society and every society that has it within its borders. My office has been working with the FBI and other law enforcement agencies in District 17, and actually outside of District 17 as well, to try to make sure we understand this. And we've been working with my colleagues in the House to make sure that everybody in the House understands how bad this issue is, how it's a growing, again, another growing industry, which you don't like to see grow. And we've been working with organizations like Unbound here in Texas to deal with this, to make sure that we can make it the issue of human trafficking much more widely known. And we've also been successful in lightning speed for the United States Congress in passing over half a dozen bills in the last few weeks to deal with human trafficking. If you talk to law enforcement about human trafficking, they'll say, look, we don't have all the tools in the toolbox we need to be able to deal with this. And so what we've done is we've listened carefully and we've tried to craft series of bills to, A, where there was no crime related to trafficking, to have a crime. For instance, if you're an online advertiser, have an internet site, and you advertise these types of things, like backdoor.com, then you can wind up being held criminally liable for the trafficking and advertising on your website. If your law enforcement gives you tool sets that you need to be able, where there was no statute before that you could rely on to prosecute traffickers, now you can do that. And we've also passed bills so that we can work with other countries to essentially have a sex offenders list that is shared around the world so that if you've used a trafficked person here in this country and you go overseas to engage in human trafficking activities, we're sharing that information with those countries. And so we've been particularly, I'm pleased with this. We're just kind of in about three innings through what I call a nine-inning game in terms of dealing with this issue, but I'm hopeful that we can move forward quickly on that. Now we move forward and talk about the issue that I think is on everybody's mind here today, and that's how do we protect life from conception through natural death. And if you remember President Obama in the early days when he would say just about anything he could get elected, he would say that abortion should be safe, legal, and rare. Today they make no pretenses about where they stand. Today they say there should be essentially no restrictions on abortion, and the more that's taxpayer funded, the better. I want to tell you this, in 2010, the voters of this country said we reject that notion. And they changed control of the House of Representatives, and they put it in control of the House and the control of people that are conservatives that believe in the value of human life. And since then, we've done all we can to stamp out abortion in this country. And we still have a long way to go. We don't have a Senate that cooperates with us on these issues. But I remember when we first were looking at our first continuing resolution to fund the government about February of 2011, right after we were sworn in, we had dozens of amendments to that continuing resolution to strip out all forms of taxpayer-funded abortion. Now, we weren't successful, because at the end of the day, you've got to have your partners in the Senate come together so you can agree on a continuing resolution that looks the same. But we did make some headway. You know, even Jefferson sometimes said, liberty is gained in inches sometimes. And so, but we're moving the right direction. We have been successful when it comes to legislation. Again, they've all gone into the trash heap of the Senate. But if the American voters make a decision to change the control of the Senate this coming November, I guess, what is that, 82 days from now? 82 days from now, hopefully we'll have a Senate that's just as pro-life as the House is. And we better pray for that. And you better get out and go to work for that. So anyway, when that happens, what we'll do is we'll bring all of these things back out of the trash can, put them on the floor of the House again, pass them like that, send them to the Senate, and hopefully we get them on the president's desk. And then he can struggle with his conscience on what happens with the American people. Now, that's not the end of the story, though. We may fail at that. We may succeed as a House and a Senate, as a legislative body, and the president may veto every one of those. But the next tool in our toolbox is the appropriations process. We haven't been able to use that like we'd like to in the House because you've got to have Senate partners to help you. But we can say, you know, the law says this, and no money shall be spent outside of what the law says. And so we can at least make sure today's laws with respect to abortion are followed, and then eventually move toward, you know, 2016 and being able to stamp it out altogether. Now, I want to give particular commendations to the Texas legislature for standing in where the federal government's been unable to do the job. As you heard in the presentation a few minutes ago, the Texas legislature has been at the leading edge of protecting life in this state, and we applaud them for what they've done. And they've really set it up well so that we never get the federal government to get its ducks in a row. Then we can join alongside the state of Texas and walk together as we protect life moving forward. In terms of legislation, well, let me say this. Did any of you see my name recently with respect to Planned Parenthood? Hold your hand up if you did. Okay, well, Abby Johnson is, again, she's one of my heroes, and I think she's still a constituent. If she's not, she used to be. But Abby reported some information, let some information out about Planned Parenthood in my hometown of Bryan, Texas. And Planned Parenthood in the year 2009 killed about 600 children. And they decided that wasn't good enough, so they put together a business plan that said we need to kill 1,100 in order to be financially viable. And I was called about that by a media source, and I sort of lost my cool. And I just said the criminal activities of Planned Parenthood know no bounds. And I also said somehow, somewhere, someday, they will pay for those crimes. I don't know how. It's going to be to a higher power than me. But someday they will. In the meantime, I thank the Texas legislature and God that clinic is closed and it will kill no more children. So, back to where I was going a minute ago, as for federal legislation, last year the House passed, and again on a bipartisan basis. There are a few from the other side of the aisle, and particularly some here in Texas, that are just as pro-life as I am. And so we passed the Pain-Capable Unborn Child Protection Act. This legislation limits dangerous late-term abortion starting at the 6th month of pregnancy when science says that unborn children can feel pain. In January of this year, the House passed, again with bipartisan support, the No Taxpayer Funding for Abortion Act. This legislation prohibits the use of federal funding for abortions and or to pay for health insurance that includes abortion, except in cases of rape, incest, or when the life of the mother is in danger. And I'm a supporter and a co-sponsor of both of those pieces of legislation. And again, as I said before, I'm disappointed that the Senate has not gone along with us. I'm a co-sponsor of some other bills that have not made the floor yet, but I hope that they will. One is called the Prenatal Non-Discrimination Act, which is known as PRENDA for short, which would prohibit abortions performed on the basis of a child's sex or race. The second one is the Healthcare Conscious Rights Act, which would protect the rights of taxpayers and healthcare workers against the Obama administration's assault on conscious and religious liberty, including the HHS mandate, pill mandate, which is sort of a non-issue today, isn't it, because of the Supreme Court. The Life at Conception Act, which extends the constitutional protection of life to the unborn from the time of conception. In other words, they wind up having the same rights under this document we call the Constitution that each of us have. The Pro-Life Act, which would restrict funding to school districts that contract with third-party school-based health centers unless they certify they will not perform abortions and they will not provide abortion referrals or materials to students. The Abortion Insurance Full Disclosure Act, which would require prominent and transparent disclosure of abortion coverage for each plan offered on an insurance exchange. Now this, I want to tell you something about this one. Obamacare is a terrible law. But one of the good things about Obamacare is that if you're a member of Congress, you have to be under Obamacare. So we have to put up with the same junk that Congress imposed on the rest of the world. And so one of the things, this disclosure is now mandatory. And so when I was looking for the plan I wanted under the D.C. exchange, I looked for the pro-life plans. There were only about seven of them out of about 60 plans, but there were seven of them. And so I have a non-abortion plan that I'm part of. And I just want to let you know that those kinds of things, you know, they do make a difference. They gave members of Congress and the people that work with them the opportunity to find a pro-life plan, if you will. The Every Child is a Blessing Act, which would stop controversial wrongful birth lawsuits based on legal theories that certain children should have been aborted. Can you imagine that? Yeah, that just goes beyond my imagination. And then lastly, there's a family called the Green Family, and you may know them more popularly as the owners of Hobby Lobby. And this family had the courage to stand up to the Gestapo tactics of the federal government and challenge the president's unlawful application of Obamacare, where he extended Obamacare to say that abortion drugs had to be made available under insurance plans on a mandatory basis. And this family showed great courage, and probably a lot of you in this room were praying for them, and they beat the United States government. And so we owe them a huge round of applause. So anyway, in combination, we are making headway. Again, not enough, but depending on what happens in 82 days, we may have more cavalry at our side, and we'll have the San Jacinto when it comes to protecting life. I believe that these actions are important in strengthening protections for unborn children, and as a representative of Congress, I will continue to work to uphold strong family values and to protect the sanctity of human life. With that, I'd like to open the floor up to questions. I'm supposed to have Q&A, right, Davina? So, okay. Any questions? And somebody want to take them? I'm going to give the microphone to Tim, and he can wander around and find you. So if you have a question, hold your hand up. If you don't, I'll go home. So. Yes, ma'am.
Hi. What is Congress doing to protect Christians worldwide?
Okay. One of the that's another area where there's generally bipartisan support in Congress is the protection of religious liberty. I don't think we're doing enough. I mean, we believe it, but are we putting it into play? Not like I'd like to. I will tell you this, if we turn to Israel first and look at Israel, I know you asked about Christians, but let's talk about Israel for a minute, because we all started there. Right before the beginning of the congressional work period, we passed a bill to provide $225 million to Israel to rebuild their Iron Dome rocket defense system to help them. And so we come together, I mean, in my mind, that's protecting a Jewish state. So we're protecting a religion. With respect to other Christian organizations, I think we give a lot of lip service. We don't do enough to protect them. The president finally, after 8 weeks, did make the right decision to provide some kinetic air cover in northern Iraq to push back on ISIS so that the Kurds, and to arm the Kurds so that the Kurds could begin to stop the slaughter of Christians in Iraq. Other than that, we don't do enough. We believe in it. We just don't do enough to protect it. So I'm hopeful that, again, if we have a different Congress sworn in January of 2015, that we can become more aggressive on this front. We believe it. We just don't do enough about it yet.
Two right here.
Oh, yes, ma'am.
Thank you for being here today. Going back to the sex trafficking issue, I'm wondering in that bill that you're working on and the rest of the representatives, if you're considering penalizing Planned Parenthood and other abortion facilities for performing abortions on minors, knowing that they're minors, and not even checking to see that, you know, they're in the sex trafficking field.
Not that I'm aware of yet, but that's something we'll take a note of. And if we haven't, we'll draft something and put it together. I mean, that's something, if you know, what you could do is take something that says human trafficking on it, sex trafficking, put anti-abortion or pro-life provisions in it, and then you wind up getting bipartisan support for it. So that's something we'll work on. That's a good thought.
One more.
Okay. Does that mean I went too long?
Congressman, thank you for being here.
Yes, sir.
We certainly appreciate your courage in moving which, the direction you are with the pro-life effort. But I wanted to touch base with you on your efforts with the veterans and disabled vets in particular. I met a disabled vet who was 70% disabled from a physical injury. He was a medic, and his intentions were to move into the medical field as an EMT, EMS. He could not get hired by any hospital, by any EMS provider because of his physical being deemed. He functioned fine, but he broke his back and was deemed 70% disabled. Because of that designation, the insurance liability would not cover the hospital or the EMS. And I was wondering if there's a way that Congress could do something to protect our veterans, because he basically had to start over from scratch in a complete field, different field. He could not put his he was a 7-year medic in the military. And those are some huge talents that could have moved over into the private sector.
You know, we haven't, not to the best of my knowledge, we haven't done anything like that to provide an accommodation for a veteran like that. We passed lots of bills under my committee, which is that I chair, the Economic Opportunity Subcommittee, to help veterans find jobs and economic opportunity. But we haven't done anything to provide liability protections for the employers for a situation like this. But Jeff's taking good notes over here, and we'll look at that next time we have an EO subcommittee meeting, because that's a great idea. I never even thought about that. I will tell you, I don't have the answers for every question. So 3.5 years ago, I wasn't planning on doing this in my lifetime, but I got mad one day and decided I was going to run for Congress. So anyway.
Let's give a big round of applause. Thank you, Congressman Flores, for coming today.
I'd like to close by this. Look, you know, we're all frustrated with what's going on in this country, but you heard Pastor Shaw say in the opening prayer something about a revival in this country. And if you go back to what the Word says something to the extent, if people will turn back to me and turn from their wicked ways, I will hear their prayers and I will heal their land. So let's not forget to pray for our country, and we can continue the American story that's great, that's pro-life. And while you're praying for this country, pray for everybody in uniform, whether military that protect us from external threats or from our first responders that protect us here at home. And so thank you for doing that, and God bless you. Bless you. Bless you. Bless you. Bless you.